The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL.
Welcome in. It's a PFF NFL podcast.
You are not
Steve
in a good
Sam.
Place this morning.
I might lose my voice at some point.
Yeah.
I might lose it.
You're battling hurt. You're playing hurt. You were texting me yesterday saying that you feared you were losing your voice. You were drinking like tea and honey and all sorts of crap.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was, I don't want to say it's the first time I've ever had tea in my life, because there's a good chance I've had it at least once, but probably the second time.
Okay.
And I had 2 cups of tea with honey after researching how do I save my voice. So tea and honey came up.
And this is all just to prevent me going on a 2-hour long monologue of metaphors.
Yeah, the people don't want that.
Yeah. Okay.
I do appreciate our listeners that sent the exploding whales to us, though.
Yes. It came true.
I know. That was great.
So now you're just sitting here, miserable, with a cold, looking like ass.
I don't feel as bad as I sound.
I think, and look pretty terrible.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I think the trouble is, it's the beard, isn't it? It's the grown-out beard. Makes me look even.
No, the beard looked fine when you weren't sick. Now you just look like, you look like someone down in their luck.
Huh. Well, we're going to try to get through it. Hopefully, I don't lose my voice.
Well, if you do, that's when we take over, monologue style.
It's important in this profession. The problem is you're supposed to really stay hydrated, too, for your voice. So I'm not as caffeinated as I need to be.
Okay. So you're down on caffeine. It's not going to help either.
Yeah.
Like all the...
And I screwed up the coffee machine again upstairs.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Exploded everywhere.
All the drugs that you take now for, like, colds and stuff, they come loaded with caffeine. I think because they're inherently, like, drowsy, you know, in themselves. So they have to, like, fire you caffeine in the pill.
So they give you downers and uppers.
Yes. Which I'm pretty sure is, like, bad. Like, isn't that why they...
Yeah.
I don't think they did it over here because you guys don't really care if people die through, you know, silliness. But in the UK, at one point, everyone went on, like, a vodka and Red Bull binge. Back when I was in college, that was the drink, right? Everyone got vodka Red Bulls. But that's the same thing, right? It's a downer and an upper in the same drink, which apparently just makes your heart explode if you have too many of them. So they basically outlawed them. They were like,
you
can't have that anymore. Now, people just changed to a different style of drink, but it was the same thing, essentially. But whatever. The point is, they stopped you having them because I'm pretty sure having a downer and an upper in the same thing is bad if you have enough of it. But maybe that's why there's a dosage limit on these things, Steve.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I'm sure the medical people have looked into it.
Oh, I'm sure there's been some research done. I'm sure we're good. Yeah, all right.
I probably don't need to send anyone a letter.
All right, let's efficiently get through week 10, shall we?
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, before you collapse over here.
Thursday night, nice win by the Raiders, 26-24 over the Los Angeles Chargers.
Yes. Yes, that happened.
It was a while ago.
It was.
Every week we're like, what? There's a Thursday game?
I barely remember anything about this game.
This game was sealed with a really nice, well-blocked run where Josh Jacobs took it to the house.
Yeah, and again, you know, the Raiders are starting to look... This whole division has really opened up for them. They did their job winning this game. The Chiefs then lose. We'll get to that later. Suddenly, this division is wide open for Chucky and the Raiders.
It really is. You know, they've got the Bengals and the Jets next.
Yeah.
So it's, like, really open.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Chiefs playing that first-place schedule could catch up to him.
Yeah.
At some point.
A big part of this game, I think, was playing the Chargers offensive line.
My gosh, the pressure was ridiculous.
Right. Suddenly all these guys that are, you know, been for the Raiders were getting sacks and pressures. Everyone's talking about Cleveland Farrell like he's the best draft pick ever because he got some sacks.
Was Joe Buck saying Furl?
Yeah, one of them was. Yeah, Furl. Okay.
I'm not correcting you. It's news to me.
He had three sacks, no other pressure of any kind, and was going up against Sam Tevy's backup. Like, you know, at some point, if you hadn't Tevy's been back. Getting sacks, it would have been a real problem. You know what I mean?
I just love the way you said that.
Like, you know, come on.
Sam Tevy's backup.
There's at some point, you have to look at who he's beating and say, yeah, all right. Like, he's a good game, but, you know, yeah.
Just for perspective, Furl had the fourth highest pass rush grade on the team in that game.
Yeah.
Despite the three sacks. Like, Max Crosby.
Crosby was significantly better, yeah. But he didn't have three sacks, so people don't notice.
Yeah. So he was getting after it, and then Benson Maioa and Maurice Hurst.
Yeah.
A bunch of guys getting after it. So Chargers O-line, a disaster, and then Phillip Rivers just kept trying to throw the ball to Eric Harris.
Yes.
Who plays for the Raiders.
Yeah, that's not good.
Safety.
Pretty sure the Chargers offensive line has by far the most total pressures allowed this season. By a distance. I haven't checked since the weekend, but a team needed to amass like 25 more in order to overtake them. So I'm going to assume that didn't happen.
That's probably a fair assumption.
Yeah.
They haven't had their bye yet, though.
Yeah, that's true. But this is going to be the reason the Chargers don't win things again.
Yeah.
Which has been the reason they don't win things every single year.
Yeah. So the Chargers continue their up and down season. And yeah, the Raiders have signs of life. We could be looking at a 7-4 team. In Oakland.
Yeah.
In a couple weeks with the Bengals and Chargers. Bengals and Jets coming up. The Detroit Lions at the Chicago Bears. Is this a late scratch calling Matthew Stafford? I mean, nobody expected Matthew Stafford to be out.
So I can't even work out what happened. Just like Saturday night reports come out. Oh, by the way, Stafford's got a broken back and he might not play.
Well, he got banged up late in the previous game.
So the reports are saying this injury dates back to last year.
Oh, of course.
And so, okay, fine. Now, but he's only supposed to miss like a week or two. He's week to week, right? With a broken back that apparently has lasted a year. Like, if it lasted a year and he's been playing through it every single week, how is it suddenly week to week and it'll be fine? Like, what? So I don't understand any of that injury stuff.
So when we were, if this was last year, Chicago Bears, I would understand it. We used to pitching, another minor league baseball story.
Uh-huh.
When you go pitch in Colorado Springs, it's like the worst place in the world.
Why?
Like, the ball flies there.
Oh.
So you're over a mile high, the ball flies.
Got it.
Your stats are just through. If you pitch...
you're just hating on Colorado Springs for some reason.
The equivalent, the quarterback equivalent would be like, you know, if the league average passer rating is 90, if you played in conditions where it would be good to have 70.
Yeah.
Okay. So we'd say you'd get, you know, Colorado Springs-itis. You'd get the like a starter who'd be like, I just got a little tendonitis. You know, it's not serious, but, you know, I just need to miss like one start. Mm. And it's like, oh, it's Tuesday in Colorado Springs. Yeah, we'll just skip that one and I'll pitch the home game when we get back, you know. Okay. If this was last year's Bears defense, maybe that would be Stafford's reasoning.
Right.
It's like, I'm having a pretty good season. You know, it's at Chicago. They got a pretty good defense. I'll just sit this one out, let Jeff take it, and I'll come back for the dome games.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Maybe that's it.
Suddenly it's flaring up.
Chicago Bears D-itis.
From Khalil Mack.
Yeah. They're not as dominant as last year.
No.
But Mitchell had his best game of the year by far.
Yeah. So Driscoll comes in. Pretty much Driscoll's it. But this was... So we've been kind of saying, as terrible as Trubisky has been this year, it's so far below his baseline previously that it was kind of strange, right? We'd been saying a couple of weeks ago that surely at some point he has to play a bit better than this. Even if it's not good, he has to play better.
Yeah, we went from pessimistic to somewhat optimistic.
But even then, it was a sort of just surely, right?
Surely.
Surely you can't continue to play this badly. Heading into the week, he was, I think, the lowest graded quarterback. Or was he, depending on what you look at, whether it's overall grade or passing grade, he was either just below or just above Sam Darnold, right? But those are the bottom.
Yeah.
But this game showed the kind of quarterback that he can be, which is, you know, okay. If he played at this level all the way through the season, the Bears would be a contender. But he has been playing so badly that it's like it's completely invalidated everything else in the offense. But this guy was capable of winning a game against Jeff Driskel.
Yeah. And this is, so the funny thing is, it's almost, it's very similar to Trubisky's season last year, except the two good games that he had came earlier. So yeah. he had all these bad games, but he had two good games in there that kind of like propped him up. And he had the rushing ability last year that propped him up a little bit, especially in some other measures. But he threw the ball well. That first, that corner route touchdown was nice. He made a lot of nice throws. I thought that was encouraging for him. Driskel had that scramble to the right, which essentially, he fired up a jump ball that eventually gets caught. But Ben's calling you out, isn't he?
Well, yeah, I like this. Ben, instead of doing his real job, which is...
Come on, don't... I made a job joke last week. He's working hard.
Well, you get one. I get... This is my one. Okay? We got one and done each.
So I just
now,
felt
now
bad.
We're not allowed to mock him after this. But apparently, instead of doing his actual job, he listens to our podcast live as it's going. But it's handy because he serves as like a fact checker for us.
It is handy.
Well, we're just talking, and who knows if we're correct or not. Ben is actually fact checking our stuff and giving us the correct answers. So Ben says, Ben's also in the UK, right? So he has some perspective on this that obviously you don't have.
On the British Isles.
Much though you're working on it. He says vodka Red Bull aren't banned. They briefly said the bar staff couldn't mix them for you, but then they realized that was stupid and didn't stop people having them. Which actually now he says it brings back some hazy memories of being given the two things side by side and then, having to do it yourself. So that makes some sense. He also says Furl is correct, apparently.
I figure if the announcers are doing it, they're on point.
He phrases it well as, it's wrong, but apparently correct.
Yeah, Furl.
Yeah.
So good job, Ben. That's Ben's life right now. He's a fact checker.
You're right.
That's what he does all morning. He checks every discrepancy among the PFF grades before they get finalized.
Yeah. So where were we? Before Ben fact-checked us?
I don't know. Oh, Driskel had that one kind of prayer for a touchdown, gave the Lions some life, but ultimately, Bears staying alive.
If they get this level of Trubisky, they're okay. They still need to look to move on, but
this level
you can
of
work
Trubisky,
with.
Yeah, but this is...
Or even, sorry, not
this
even
is the
this
one
level.
Game in the pie.
Stop it. Not even this level. If they get, if they split the difference and get somewhere between this guy and the guy they've had the rest of the year...
Oh, then
they're okay. They can win games.
They've got a reasonable shot.
The problem is that they just couldn't possibly survive with him playing at the level he'd been playing at.
So somebody, your Allen Robinson theory? Because you always say Allen Robinson has played with Christian Hackenberg.
He hasn't had a good quarterback since high school. Maybe.
Yeah. Did
I
you
don't
see
even know who
somebody breaking it down?
No.
So he's got, we always talk about, he had Hackenberg, he had Blake Bortles, and he has Trubisky.
Mm-hmm.
But even before that, he had Matt McGloin, who... kind of came out of nowhere and became like, oh, this guy looks reasonable at Penn State. And then before that, he had a high school quarterback named Rob Bolden, who also went to Penn State, was a 4-star and did nothing as a quarterback, eventually became a wide receiver.
So he may have sucked as well.
Yes.
Okay.
So Allen Robinson has
may not
a
have
history.
Ever played with a good quarterback.
Yes. His whole life is just making mediocre,
poor guy.
Actually poor quarterbacks look mediocre.
What's amazing?
Mediocre
is that-
enough that people... believe in them.
Yeah, what's amazing is that he's managed to pull one good looking year out of almost all of those guys.
Yeah.
That's the most incredible part about it. It's not
amazing.
Just that he doesn't look awful with all of them. It's that he's actually transformed the perception of each of those guys for 1 year, just about.
I love it.
That's incredible.
Pretty impressive. And a my guy alert.
Oh, yeah?
Nick Kwiatkowski.
Yeah.
He's got the strong flipper.
It helped that at one point Driskel just decided to throw him the ball.
Well, yeah. That's induced it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Just standing there?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's good. You got to be in the right position. Got to be in the right place.
Yeah. That was...
That is exactly why defensive performance is dependent on the offense.
Yeah, because at some point Driskel's going to decide whether or not to throw the ball right at your face.
Yes. But he had 9 tackles, 4 stops, got in there, 5 pressures. The pick you mentioned, it's all good. He had a good game.
Yeah. Bengals got stomped.
Man, that was...
Uh-oh. Sneeze.
That was pretty impressive stuff. The sneeze button. Pretty impressive stuff by Lamar. Just wasn't missing throws. Hi.
Hi.
Accuracy was incredible, and then he just reels off the long run with the spin move everybody's talking about.
The run was pretty absurd.
He really is playing... Forget his skill set for a minute. He really is playing with that special level of confidence that you only see a few guys. I mean, even just like on the field when he's, you know, waving at people and waving bye-bye and doing this, and like, he's just got to feel like, hey, I know I'm going to do some special things out here.
Yeah, he's phenomenal in this game. Again, there's a certain degree to which you have to look at the opposition and say the Bengals right now are a dumpster fire.
Of course.
This was an expected beatdown. But yeah, Lamar Jackson was phenomenal. They broke out like the veer. They ran an option play where Lamar Jackson pitched it to RG3, and a bunch of other people pointed out that was an all Heisman backfield.
Yeah,
RG3, Mark Ingram, and Lamar Jackson, all three of them have Heismans. That was the three guys in the backfield.
All they need is Danny Werfel back there.
Yeah. Also, so this is probably a little bit unfair because it's sort of, you know, 5 yards worth of bursts in on an option play, but the sort of Lamar Jackson's athleticism before pitching it to RG3 kind of highlighted just how far RG3 appears to have fallen in that regard. Like, this is a former, like, sprint, you know, borderline Olympic caliber sprinter, hurdler, and looks like completely overshadowed by the guy who pitched him the ball.
Yeah.
Now, okay, you know, he's dealt with injuries and stuff before that, and Lamar looks pretty special himself, but like, RG3 doesn't look like the same level of athlete he used to.
Not the same guy. He's only seven. I mean, look, I can relate, but he's only 7 years into his career.
Yeah.
You know?
Uh-huh.
We can all relate.
Hey, look, we've all lost a step or two over the years.
We have. But he's like way younger than us.
That's true.
I mean, his draft year was 2012.
Yeah.
Ours was 04.
God.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So we can relate, but not that much.
Right.
Like, come on, dude. Keep yourself in shape. Ryan Finley. So, like, the scouting report coming out, Ryan Finley, you know, makes some good decisions and blah, blah, blah. Doesn't have a great arm, can't really complete, doesn't really do a good job completing passes outside the numbers. He was 0 for 5 on passes outside the numbers at 10-plus yards down the field. Not all his fault. He threw at least one accurate there, but, you know, just kind of showed.
Yeah.
And he had the late pick six. That wasn't deep down the field, but that was outside the numbers, and he just floats it for a pick six.
So he wasn't good at all, but there's basically, he was a sacrificial lamb out there. There is literally no way he could look good in this offense.
He was under pressure more than he was not under pressure.
Yes, which is insane, right? Now, some of that's on him. We talked before about young quarterbacks. They hold the ball a bit too long, and that's where problems arise. But this Bengals offensive line has been hemorrhaging pressure all season long. So it's not like it's all him. But the point is, you've got no shot when you're playing at that kind of, behind that kind of offensive line. You need, at the very minimum, if you're going to throw out a rookie who's not a, you know, not a surefire first round talent that you think can elevate the play of everybody else around him, at the very minimum, the situation around him needs to be helping him. And there's no way this situation in Cincinnati right now is helping him at all. The offensive line is arguably the worst in the NFL. There's no receiving weapons. A.J. Green was supposed to be back, then re-aggravates the injury, disappears again, and, you know, it just goes horribly. Like, if you look at the average time to throw stuff, what we talked about absolutely manifested itself. Andy Dalton has the fastest average time to throw this year. Finley is one of the slower ones this week. 2.8 average time to throw, which is like half a second, I think, per snap. Slower than Dalton. So he definitely didn't help the offensive line, but neither did the offensive line help him. So he's in a horrible situation, and there's basically no way he can look good within the confines of that offense.
Yeah, completely agree. So I think the Bengals are in full, who's a part of the rebuild mode.
Dude, they're flying now. They're chasing that number one overall pick.
Oh,
the Dolphins are busy winning games left and right. Suddenly it's Cincinnati to lose.
I mentioned last week, I don't think it really matters. I mean, I think there's going to be heavy debate between Joe Burrow to Justin Herbert at the top among quarterbacks. So, I mean, Burrow looked great. And Burrow would be a nice story for Cincinnati.
Local.
From the area.
Done,
you know,
good.
Mr. Ohio.
Mm.
So, I could, you know, they're going to have their choice, though, potentially. Could still screw it up
and
win some games. But they're in full. Let's see what's happened with the rebuild. And then I think the Ravens, they're just doing what really good teams do. You're supposed to dominate that game.
Yeah.
They did it in all phases.
I mean, this is good in terms of, look, you go out, you beat the Patriots, everybody's singing your praises. This is quite the sort of trap game, you know, underwhelming.
Yeah, got to go on the road.
After that, you could easily have seen them coming down, making this an ugly, scrappy battle that they only just squeaked out, but instead they just trounced them.
Yep. So, good job, Ravens. Oh, did it.
Dude, you are just a mess today.
I am. Bills at Browns.
Yeah.
Talk.
Bills at Browns. Finally.
Oh, gosh.
Some signs of life.
It's in a terrible spot.
From Baker Mayfield. Are you likely to take this entire desk with you? As your,
yeah. We're good.
I don't think Baker played particularly well again, but he finally pulled things out at the end. The Browns were not helped by catastrophic play calling, in, not even in the red zone, in the shadow of the goal mouth. Like, they had 8 consecutive plays of goal to go. Didn't get any of them. This was it was pretty ugly.
Such a weird game overall. So just as far as Baker goes, we had been saying, you know, he had had some terrible interception luck throughout the season. Didn't have a high number of turnover-worthy plays. He had a couple in this one to kind of balance things out a little bit. Got away with a couple passes that should have been picked. That first touchdown was awesome. I mean, that was classic Baker. I mean, a laser, put it on a guy, and really tight coverage. Bought some time to find Higgins for the game winner.
Higgins' only target, by the way. Callaway wasn't even playing. Higgins actually played a reasonable amount of snaps, like 33, I think. But that was his only target. He scores a touchdown. What was interesting in this game to me is that the Browns spent a lot of time with both running backs on the field, Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb.
Yeah, they did a good job. I mean, they were trying to get creative there. And, you know, usually when you have Chubb and Hunt on the field at the same time, you're not going to run I formation and have one of them line up as a lead blocker. But when you're splitting them all over the field, they did do some nice job, nice stuff.
Yeah.
Isolating those guys in the pass game and everything.
Hunt in particular spent a lot of time being lined up legitimately as a wide receiver while Chubb was in the backfield.
Yeah.
It worked. I think those two, like that. So I think a lot of people have been talking about how the Browns need to pivot away from this 11 personnel.
Going to get it.
Three wide receivers deal. And they've been talking about, you know, get tight ends on the field more. But actually, maybe the way they should be doing it is exactly what they did yesterday, which is
get the backs.
Right. Get, instead of one back, two, instead of 12 personnel, get 21 personnel on the go. Two backs, one tight end, and the receivers. I still think you need to, you know, throw the ball at Higgins more. But this, I think, actually functions as a way of.
Or just straight 20 personnel. Three wide.
Now there you go.
And two back.
You're talking. That could work too. I'm all for that. I think there's you know, we said all the way along, there's things to work with here. The skill position players are good. Once things start to coalesce and actually make some sense, this team should be better than they've shown on offense so far. So I liked what they did there. The one-on-one matchup of Odell Beckham and Tre'Davious White was really good to watch.
It was really good. Yeah, I don't know what the numbers ended up as. I mean, I can look at them, but like first play of the game, Odell Beckham kind of had a step on him. Baker missed him. White made a few plays on the ball, broke up a fade in the end zone. I think he broke up a slant in there too. I mean, it was a lot of contested catches. It was a really good battle.
So at the moment, it is like pending review. 10 targets, 3 catches, 27 yards, 3 pass breakups. So Tre'Davious White broke up as many passes as Beckham ended up catching.
Yeah, I think he gave up 4 for 39. I think, that, like I said, he got whooped. It's one of those.
Right. It's not
on one. Like overall, White won more than he lost, but the 39 yards easily could have been, you know, 85, you know, if Baker hits a throw.
Yeah, and there were a lot of those were really close, like the, you know, end zone fade and one of those forlorn goal to go situations where it was in Beckham's hands. He ends up getting the ball out right at the end, you know, play the ball and the hands, not necessarily the as it's coming in. Odell Beckham got it in his hands and Tre'Davious White forced it out. So those are the kind of plays that can go either way. But that was a really fun one-on-one matchup.
How do the Browns have so much trouble on shovel and tap passes?
I don't know.
Baker threw a pick on a shovel pass a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
He had a tap pass dropped where the timing was just completely off with Kareem Hunt. And he had a shovel pass dropped. That was one of the end zone plays.
Yeah, the thing yesterday looked, so it was a tap pass forward, but barely went forward. So somebody scooped it and went the other way. And for a minute, it looked like they were going to basically toss a fumble six.
Oh my god!
The other way,
on a tap pass.
On a tap pass, which is the thing that we talk about inflating quarterbacks' numbers because they're so easy.
No, his numbers are going down because of tap passes, because they either can't, they just can't catch them, yeah, or he's throwing picks off of shovel passes.
I mean, I was texting you, I was like, this would be the most Browns play ever.
Oh my gosh,
that they,
yeah,
try and tap pass and somehow conspire to, it goes backwards, and they end up losing a touchdown on that play. Yeah, I honestly don't understand how they screw up so many of those. They are supposed to be, you know, easy, cheap plays, and somehow they're working against the Browns right now. This is why it's, you know, everyone wants to point the finger at somebody, you know, whether it's Baker. Baker's playing terribly. He's bad. He's not a good quarterback. Should have taken Lamar. Freddie Kitchens is in over his head. It's a disaster. What is he doing? But it's everything, right?
It's
all of these things together. Like, there's just so many things going wrong that should be working. And it's only because all of them are going badly at the same time that the whole thing looks like a mess. Now, you, I guess if you want to say, ultimately, the buck with all of this stops with the head coach, then fine. But like, Freddie Kitchens isn't the reason people aren't catching tap passes.
No.
Like, you know, that's not a head coaching fault.
On the other side, so I just went through all of Josh Allen's throws, and I got a very strong Cam Newton type of vibe in this. Cam Newton as a passer, more than on the good and the bad. He ends up with a pretty, you know, mid-tier type of grade for us. But like, this was more Josh Allen than what we've seen the rest of the year. Other than, of course, the deep ball. He's over 5, 20-plus yards. We've seen
How
that.
How is he so bad at that?
Anytime he's got to put touch on the ball, it's just not good right now.
You could commentate it live. There was one, it was like a big, was it a flea flick or a big play action thing? It's like,
they did the yoink play and he screwed it up.
Josh Allen back to throw deep. Josh Allen back to overthrow by 5 yards. Yeah, there it is.
Yeah.
Like, what? I don't understand. How are you so far off?
He was overthrowing a lot of passes down the field. But man, just showing off the laser for an arm. He was late on a few, but it didn't matter. He's still throwing lasers. So the intermediate level, he was really, really good. He was throwing deep outs, deep comebacks, working the middle of the field pretty well, the 10 to 19 range. And then a lot of the short stuff just was not where it needed to be. He's still got like 2 or 3 plays per game where he's just not recognizing blitzes. There's a free rusher that he needs to be aware of, and he needs to do something about it. Find a hot receiver. Work off it. And, you know, he's trying to scramble and make a play. And then he almost fumbled the game away. I mean, he was generally taking care of the ball. He had a turnover-worthy play and a pass that Greedy could have picked off. And then he fumbles at the end, which easily just, I mean, that would have blown the game completely. But they recovered it, so.
His passer rating on deep passes this year is 38.
I was going to say, I thought it was like 10. But that was last year. I think it was 10.
Jimmy G is 107. Deshaun Watson is 112. Russell Wilson is 138.
Do Ryan Fitzpatrick and his terrible arm.
Ryan Fitzpatrick.
It's probably at least 50.
Is. Yeah, 50, 49.
See?
Like, that's, there are just 12 quarterbacks that are over 100. And Josh Allen is, what did I say, 30-something? 38.
He should let everybody go deep and then just spike
and
the ball.
And he has as strong an arm as anybody in the NFL. Which is why that, by the way, as a concept, is just not that useful.
I told you, where his arm was relevant here is when he was throwing deep crossers and stop routes and comebacks and deep outs. That's where his arm showed up here, because his timing's still not great. And you see a lot of routes where it's like, oh, you're open now. Now I'm going to throw it. And because he has a laser, he can get away with it. He's not really throwing with the type of anticipation that you want. So the Bills' defense overall played pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I still think they're being held down a little bit. I mean, it wasn't a terrible game from Allen, but they need better quarterback play.
They do. This was a strange game. But ultimately, I think did break the right way in terms of who had the better of it.
Yeah.
Even if it did come down to, what, a missed field goal at the end.
Yep. 19-16 Browns. Carolina Panthers at the Green Bay Packers. The Packers
snow game.
Survived the snow game 24-16. Aaron Rodgers saying, man, it's about time we finally got some calls. Got that roughing the passer.
Yeah.
So when the Packers have gotten calls this year, it's been on third down where the penalty had nothing to do with the failed third down. Like the illegal hands to the face twice against the Lions.
Yeah.
It was like, all right, you guys, if you were about to turn it over or kick a field goal. Same thing in this game. They get a roughing call on third down that was incomplete. Yeah, it was a questionable roughing. And then they drive the length of the field.
Very questionable roughing. Yeah, this was one of the, it was the full body weight landing on the QB thing. Only he didn't. Like, he did exactly what they tell them to do, which is sort of fall to the side. You know, get him in your arms, bring him around this way, and go to the side of him. So you don't land on him with your full body weight. He still got flagged.
Like, but they haven't even really been emphasizing the body weight thing, too.
No, this is, but that's like when they were doing it, that's what they were saying, is don't land on him, straight on top of him, take him to the side, land alongside him that way. That's exactly what happened. They still flagged him for it.
So here's what drives me nuts about the officiating. I don't like talking about refs in general, but at PFF, we grade every player on every play. Mm-hmm. We work really hard to try to see the game through the same eyes. And we also have the ability to say, hey, here's this pass, which reminds me of this other pass and this other pass. Like, we all kind of like go into our memory banks and say, I've seen this pass, very similar, 15 times or whatever. How have we graded this in the past? Right? And that's part of the way we do checks and balances. I think refereeing in the NFL, you don't have that ability to do that in real time. To be like, oh, here's this play. We initially called it roughing the passer. And then comparing it to similar roughing the passers of like the last 2 years. Well, there's this one and this one. This one we didn't call and this one we did call. And then just and like getting it right. In other words, the game is just at the mercy of just interpretation too much. And again, people might criticize PFF because they're like, oh, you're subjective. You're this, you're that. You have different graders, which we do. But ultimately, we have a review process and then a further review process. And then we all come together if there are questions and say, look, this dig route at 20 yards with this level of separation, we always give this a 1. So give it a 1. Get it right. I feel like the refs do similar things as we do, right? They have this general rule structure. There's some level of subjectivity to it. But they don't have the review process that we have, which leads to this. Illegal hands to the neck and different things like that really impacting games.
I think that's a big problem. I think the other thing is the huge frustration that you never hear any sensible explanation. The best you get is after the fact. You get, you know, Al Riveron or whatever coming out and posting a video.
Like, here's what we were thinking.
Actually, we got it all right. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
What I think is really helpful is hearing the conversations that happen between officials. So rugby has this where they have what the AAF had, the sky judge, right? Rugby calls it a TMO, television match official, but the same idea. It's a guy sitting in a booth next to all the monitors so he can actually look at this stuff. But the real key with rugby is that the ref is mic'd up, as is the TMO, so you hear the conversation between the two of them, right? So the ref will say, hey, check this, was it whatever? And then they have a little conversation. The TMO goes, here's what I'm seeing. The ref goes, nah, it's, you know, whatever. But you hear the whole conversation. It's not just it goes away into a little box and then he comes back and says, call on the field stands.
Right.
What? We can see the thing. Like, if we are seeing pictures that look completely different to the call on the field stands.
You don't want to hear those conversations.
It feels well, the NFL doesn't want you to hear those conversations.
No. But listen, we screwed up the last four. Let's give this one to the Packers.
This is the thing, right? Unless you genuinely fear the process, you should have no problem letting people hear that.
Yeah, I don't see that.
Because it's important to try and justify what it is you're doing. Like, rugby still screws up the calls. It's not like they're 100% on the TMO stuff, but you at least hear what they were thinking, and it makes it better, right? Because you can go, all right, fine, they didn't think, but it makes some sense. Now you just get this call on the field stands. But we're looking at pictures that say it shouldn't. You should have to explain that more than just, no, it stands. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I just don't see that happening.
I just think that needs to happen because we're reaching this point, particularly with the pass interference stuff, where we're just in a space where nobody understands what on earth is happening. And if you want to actually have some trust in the system, you need to have some sort of transparency as to what's actually happening. Like, even I can't remember which game it was, but there was a late pass interference, again, call where Dean Blandino comes out and legitimately says that they call the game differently late in the game. Like, when it's, you know, game-winning drive or whatever, he's like, different standard.
Let him play.
Like, well, that in and of itself appears to be a problem. And he's announcing that on live TV. Like, you need to have some bigger transparency in this stuff because at the moment, nobody has any idea what the hell the rules are.
I mean, like I said, we might not be perfect over here. We work really hard, though, to get everybody on the same page. And I think this ref thing is similar. Anyway, Rodgers played a pretty good game. Another reason why I think touchdown stats are stupid. He made a nice pass to Jimmy Graham in the end zone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he threw a touchdown pass. Jimmy Graham just didn't stay in bounds.
Yeah.
Completely skewed his stats.
Sure.
I didn't think they were going to overturn that, but yeah, he only had 1 foot in. But his knee hit the pylon. Does your knee hitting the pylon count as like your knee being down?
I don't know. That's another one of those. That particular play is one of those areas where I'm not sure anybody knows what the rules are.
That was like, I felt like yesterday was the day of just a million reviews on like whether or not it was a pass. You know, arm going forward and all that stuff. And I remember the one, I can't remember if we talked about this, but there was the one last year, Mahomes on Monday Night Football. He went up to throw and a guy got his hand on the ball before his arm moved forward. And then his arm moved forward and technically the ball went forward and they called it an incomplete pass. There's a lot of these where I feel like, yeah, the arm is technically moving forward, but if you get your arm hit,
yeah, it's supposed to be moving
forces
forward. It's supposed to be moving forward with control of the ball. There's like, I think there's another word in there as well, but with something control of the ball.
Yeah.
And like, there's ones where the ball is sideways and just happens to be going forward in his hand.
Yeah, that's not control.
That is zero control of the ball.
The Mahomes example the other day, last year, I remember tweeting, I was like, wait, is that a fumble? And everybody was like, you idiot. What? Look at the rule book and stuff like that. But it was like his arm was up and a guy had his hand on the ball.
Yeah.
And then the hand just went forward and the ball went forward. So it's like, oh, it must be incomplete. But it's like, if you get the ball, if you hit the ball before the arm's going forward,
well,
that's got to be a fumble,
if
right?
If you have literally dislodged the ball within his hand, like you hold a ball, you know, at right angles essentially to your hand. If you spun it the other way and it's just coming out forward because your hand is moving that way,
then that's a fumble.
That's not control. That's the ball is out and it just happens to be getting like swept along by the motion of your hand.
There was just a lot of, I felt like every time I was looking up, it was a ref telling me the rule on the field stands, it's incomplete or it's a fumble. And yeah.
Where did you stand on the Kyle Allen thing after this game? Because a lot of people were talking him up because of the late drive that ultimately came.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I tweeted that I was impressed with him. The grade won't be impressive because he had a bad end zone interception, which was terrible. I don't think we reviewed what should have been the game-ending interception yet, and how much to blame the wide receiver. That's going to need a look. It looked really bad on TV, but it's one of those. Aikman did a good job saying, yeah, the receiver needs to work back to the ball, but he was still kind of late throwing it out there. I think he had, a fumble in there, too? Is that right?
Yeah.
So the turnover-worthy plays were bad. It's one of those games where it's like, if you take away those three terrible plays,
right?
Like I can still be, I was still impressed with him despite those bad plays, because I always talk about throwing conditions. I mean, he's throwing in the snow. That's not easy. He made a ton of big plays. He stood in there against a pretty tough defense.
He dropped in a few absolute dimes.
Yeah.
During the course of the game.
I mean, I think there was more good than bad there.
Yeah. But ultimately.
No, I mean, no, sorry. I shouldn't even say more good than bad, but there was a lot of good to be encouraged by. I mean, it was like a Daniel Jones game, right?
Like a Daniel Jones.
It was a lot like a Daniel Jones game. Where it's like, oh, here's a good thing. Got to avoid this one. Good thing. Okay, don't ever do that again. Good thing.
This is true. I thought there was a lot to like. It was an interesting game because you don't, as the Panthers right now, you don't necessarily need him to play amazingly, but you need to see enough to know that that's likely to happen in, you know, long term.
Well, that old line got whooped.
Right.
Too.
Because you're now essentially assuming that Cam Newton probably doesn't play there anymore. Like, I think now it's sounding like the balance of probabilities, he's going to be moved on, whether it's cut, whether it's traded, whatever. Like, Kyle Allen is very much auditioning for this job long term. And if you're looking at that, you don't necessarily need him to be incredible every week, but you need to know that within the game, he's capable of doing that, and okay, there's a few bad plays in there. Let's, you know, strip those out, and we can work with this.
I mean, I'm fully in. Look, as bad as Will Greer looked in the preseason, he did show some encouraging stuff in college. He's not out of the equation.
No.
Kyle Allen's not out of the equation. Drafting a quarterback's not out of the equation. That's how you do it in Carolina.
Yeah, I mean,
especially Greer's, if they could get something pretty valuable for Cam.
Yes, Greer's in a tough spot because it's difficult to see the opportunity presenting itself for him to actually play at any point.
Oh, right. I know.
Like, Kyle Allen gets the audition for the rest of the year. Like, barring injury, I just don't see how Greer sees the field. Like, unless he suddenly turns into the practice superstar.
Yeah.
You know, lights it up every single practice time in the 7 reps that he gets while Kyle Allen is taking a drink. Like, it's hard to see how that guy gets a chance, particularly if they then draft another one. Like, you know.
Right.
So he's going to, or I guess preseason is the other venue, right? If he gets.
Yeah, preseason.
He has a run with the second team and tears it up, which is hard enough to do in and of itself.
He's got to look better than he did last year.
Yes, a lot. But Green Bay had a, this is a big win for them because the rest of that division is, or the Vikings at least kept pace and they needed to sort of. Yeah.
But the Saints lost too.
Yeah, we'll get to that. Let's go to the weird ones, right? Kansas City, they lose to Tennessee.
Well, can I just finish one thing?
If you must.
But pending review.
Yes.
That's one of the worst games we've graded for Luke Kuechly in a while. Couple missed tackles, and it looked like the Packers did a good job of kind of like high-lowing it. You know how he's so aggressive, and he just kind of like jumps routes and stuff like that? Looked like they took advantage of his aggressiveness, used it against him. All right.
Okay.
The weird ones.
Patrick Mahomes comes back for the Chiefs, and yet somehow they lose to the Ryan Tannehill-led Tennessee Titans. This is the perfect example of... So Mahomes comes back. He's incredible still. Tyreek Hill is still phenomenal. But this defense is so bad that it can cost them. It can basically, their defense is so bad that it turns whoever the opposing offense is into the same level as the Chiefs' offense. Like, yeah. it completely eradicates any advantage you have in having basically the best offense in the NFL because your defense is so terrible that it makes your opposition look at the same level.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
There's just, it's so, like, football's such a funny game. There's no consistency, right? Like, Charvarius Ward had a few weeks. It's like, oh, you got this big long corner who can, you know, hang with some bigger receivers and had a few nice games, and he has a rough game. Then you have Rashad Fenton, who gets beat for the game winner. A couple plays earlier, though, or, you know, one of his key plays earlier, he's playing, like, free safety and makes an incredible pass breakup, and you're like, what? Who's the, you know, Fenton, that's a great play by some, you know, no name on their defense, and then he falls down on the game winner. And, you know, gives it up. I mean, they just don't have good enough talent back there. Guys that make plays every single week between Ward, Bashaud Breeland, Rashad Fenton on his 14 snaps. It's just not good enough. And now that they've lost D Ford rushing the passer and they got Frank Clark outside of one game, it's just not good.
Yeah. The secondary generally was just making life way too easy. Like, Tannehill didn't even play that well. But when the game was on the line late and he needed to drive, it wasn't hard. They just made life easy for him.
He had a couple really nice runs.
Right.
Did have a couple nice throws, but some bad fumbles and sacks early on kind of marred his game.
They just made it life way too easy for them. That's even aside from the fact that Derrick Henry was just able to run riot. So leading into this game, you have Chris Jones, who's a top 10 interior defender in the NFL, one of the best pass rushers, just an absolute monster. And then you have, on the other side of the ball, you've got Nate Davis, who is one of the worst guards in the NFL right now. Through, I don't want to say through no fault of his own, but, you know, raw rookie with, like, weird technical issues that clearly needed to be cleaned up, coming out of Charlotte. Like, you know, again, the guy's not really being set up for success here.
Yeah.
But they're playing him, and he's got a grade, like, in the 20s, right? So this is theoretically one of the biggest mismatches in the entire NFL one-on-one this week. Why was Chris Jones not lined up against him every single snap? I know they've been moving him around way more this season, right? But at some point you go, look, this is the biggest mismatch we have. You're going to stay here every snap. You're not moving this week. Stay opposite him and kill him every play. Like, why would you have him spend half his time on the other side against the tackle? Like, what is that achieving?
I don't know.
That would seem to me to be a bad game plan.
Run defense, which also failed them.
Right, but it's not like that would,
like,
again, would have been better at that right opposite Nate Davis. There's just no scenario by which you're better off moving him away from Nate Davis at any point in this game.
I hear you.
I don't understand how this fails coaches.
I thought that Spagnuolo might scheme it up a little bit better, despite all the talent. I thought that they had a chance to maybe get a little bit better because he'd play a little bit more zone and be a little bit more game plan oriented. We just haven't seen it from that defense yet. So the Titans just continue to tighten.
Yeah.
Appreciate all the Titans fans reaching out to us saying, hey, we listen. Raising their hand. We listen to you guys. Don't stop talking about us. Impressive win, man.
It was. I mean, they, yeah, like you say, this was helped by Kansas City's defense being horrendous. But
there was a fumble six. I mean, there's other stuff, too.
Yeah, they hung in there.
Also, I mean, we're talking like the field goal. Was it a fake? The intentional grounding.
No, so it was a bad snap.
Okay, I didn't go back and check what happened.
The holder just picked up and flung wildly to his left.
So the intentional grounding just puts them into like, okay, you just need... I mean, as much as you want to blame the defense, they were put in a terrible situation.
Sure, yeah, there was some weird stuff in here.
Mahomes also took a sack on 3rd and 2. We debated a little bit. It's a screen. So this is where sometimes Mahomes' playmaking... Like he got away with a couple yesterday, too. One that looked bad that wasn't really on him, but a couple cross-body ones that were dangerous. But they set up a screen on 3rd and 2, and it wasn't there. So we probably should have just buried it, but he wanted to keep the clock going. So he went out, took a sack. I mean, they lost 5 yards. That ended up, I don't know. It didn't end up hurting them, but just like a lot of little things when they're running the clock here that weren't great.
Yeah. It was an interesting game, though, and, you know, there's a lot of talent on this Tennessee roster. They are frustrating because it doesn't show up every single week, but they can do damage. Like, yeah, they showed what happens when, and they, unlike the Chiefs, actually took advantage of their mismatches. Like Harold Landry wrecked Cameron Irving multiple times.
Irving's been
in particular
rough
for that strip sack that they scooped and scored on. They were able to take advantage of those big mismatches. The Chiefs didn't for some reason.
Our boy, Mitchell Schwartz,
missed his first snaps.
Missed a snap.
Ruined the streak.
It was almost 8,000 snaps straight. But man, I mean, it's so funny because I always debate. We keep focusing on these macro concepts. You know, get a quarterback. You know, the pass rate. You can kind of protect your O-line and all that stuff. And then you run into a game where Mitchell Schwartz gets hurt. Martinez Rankin comes in, literally for one snap, and gets hurt. Right, or moves to right tackle and then gets hurt, and he's out for them. I mean, they were down to 5 healthy offensive linemen.
Yeah,
at one point,
which was Cam Irving,
and one of them was Cam Irving. I mean, there's things like that where it's like, all right, from like a team building standpoint, like you really have to prepare for that.
Yeah.
You can't just completely like as much as it's like, look, it's a Mahomes driven team, and he'll pretty much have success whether it's Cam Irving or Eric Fisher at left tackle, but at some point, like when disaster strikes, it's like, man, you can't be that bad.
Well, that's
you got to have this depth and all that stuff.
I mean, even at some point, you're just going to be screwed. You know, this most offensive lines in the NFL are not great, and the second you have to go into the bench, you have major problems. But we always talk about this idea, the importance of just being average. Like, you don't need 5 Mitchell Schwartzes out there, but
right.
But having 1 Cam Irving becomes a problem.
Right.
Like, he's bad enough that it can cost you games in and of itself. Whereas if you just have 5 guys that are even, you know, an Austin Ryder caliber guy, 5 guys at that level, you're okay. But 1 guy at the, like, you're way better. You're way better off having 5 Austin Ryders in terms of caliber than you are having 3 of them, one Mitchell Schwartz and 1 Cam Irving. Like, the Cam Irving,
yeah,
is bad enough that it can be a catastrophic issue.
I'm also viewing this from the standpoint of the NFL's making a ton of moves to protect quarterbacks and all that stuff. You know, one way to protect quarterbacks? Have a few more active spots on the game day roster.
I don't know the
rosters a little bit.
Sure. I just don't know that the problem is a lack of quality offensive linemen, not lack of active quality.
No, that's fine. All I'm saying is we were one snap away from the second string tight end lining up a tackle again.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like the Falcons had to do a couple years ago.
But the biggest problem is the second you have to go into the bench, you're screwed anyway.
Oh, no, you are. But, I mean, you're still better off.
Like, honestly, you might not be that much worse putting your blocking tight end at right tackle.
Yeah, you might be right.
All right, so that was one weird game. The next one is...
By the way, this is danger territory for the Chiefs.
Yeah, well, the division being wide open for the Oakland Raiders is the flip side of the coin that it's now slipping away, potentially, from Kansas City.
Yeah, that's their 4th loss. In their 4 losses, they've given up 35.
Only one of which Matt Moore was at the helm of, right?
No, he was 2-0.
2? Okay.
He was 2-0, plus he won the game where he played the majority of the game.
Oh,
they won 36.
They lost the game with him.
Nope.
Okay.
But in their losses, they gave up 35 to Tennessee, 31 to Houston, 19 to the Colts. That was a bad one for the offense. And they gave up, looking at the wrong, where else am I looking here? They have three losses or four? Feels like we could do a better job here.
Mm. And by we mean you.
Oh, no, they only got three. Is that right?
They are 6-4 right now.
Why can't I count here?
I don't know. I mean, it's probably because you're quite sick.
Oh, they lost to Green Bay.
They did lose
a Matt Moore game.
Are you even in the right year?
Yeah, 2019. They did lose a Matt Moore game. My apologies.
They've lost to the Packers, the Texans.
So they gave up 35, 31,
and
31, and 19 in their losses.
Yeah.
Sorry. Let's move on.
Yeah. Yeah, let's do that.
Quicker?
Okay. So
how did this happen?
Yes, the exploding whale. It's exactly what we predicted, right? A decaying mass of detritus ultimately had built up enough noxious gas within it so that when someone poked it with a stick, it exploded and you know, made a mess. That's really what happened here. Somehow this Atlanta Falcons team...
Alternatively, it could have been.
...was poked with a stick.
Dan Quinn passed off play calling duties in this game.
That probably didn't hurt. Let's say that.
Did you know? Did you see my tweet yesterday?
No.
This is the only game of the Drew Brees era in which the Saints scored fewer than 10 points at home.
Wow. I didn't.
So I was looking it up because you always, you know, you got Brees and Rodgers, Brady and Peyton and all that stuff. It's never happened to Rodgers at home. It's happened since 06. That was the cutoff I was using. It happened one time to Brady at home and it was in 06. Other than like the game, this is games like where they started and finished. They didn't like play a half, whatever. And I don't think it ever happened to Peyton ever in his career with the Colts or the Broncos. Just for comparison with those other, you know, Hall of Fame elite quarterbacks. That's how rare yesterday was. Now, the Saints got stopped at the goal line with no time left, and it almost screwed up my stat and it almost screwed everything up. I'm glad he got stopped just so we could use it. But that garbage time touchdown would not change the fact that the Falcons defense just played out of their skulls out of nowhere.
Yeah, they really did. And this was kind of the thing that had been annoying everybody about the Falcons is that this defense has played well in the past. It's not like they were absent of talent entirely. You know, there's some question marks or whatever, but there's skill.
They're like Trubisky. They're like Trubisky. It's got to get better.
Right. It was their baseline was higher than they'd been showing. And eventually it finally took them, you know, a while for them to actually rock up and do it. But yeah, this was what the Falcons should have been playing like all season long.
Wasn't the game I wasn't expecting this to be the game where they got their pass rush going against the Saints. Like Ryan Ramczyk still blocked while everybody else struggled. Grady Jarrett had a huge game and they were getting contributions. The Falcons, guys like Alan Bailey, Adrian Claiborne, they all got after it.
Right. Claiborne had one of those games that he has every now and again where his one move works.
Yeah.
You know, if you only got one move, you just need to find the right guy that one move works against, and suddenly you're going to look like a superstar again.
You know how guys just get those, they get cut-ups of everybody's moves?
Yeah.
It's just like, here's 3,000 rushes of Adrian Claiborne's
move. Exactly the same thing. What was weird,
and
though,
like
is that
three times he tried to spin.
What's strange, though, is that it was Teron Armstead that it worked against, right? One of the better left tackles in the NFL, a guy that you would think is going to be able to handle the one move you know is coming every single time. But apparently not.
But they didn't study Adrian.
I mean, even if you didn't,
enough.
Right? It's not like he's changing it up in game. You would figure it out pretty quickly, right?
I know.
So, yeah, that's strange that. I mean, Andres Peak getting wrecked is slightly less surprising, but Teron Armstead struggling against Adrian Claiborne was quite a shock.
Yeah. It's an interesting spot now, I think, for the Saints. I wouldn't worry too much if I'm the Saints. I just picked the Saints on Good Morning Football for the Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah?
I was like, oh, yeah, Patriots Saints. Pretty clear. Saints are the best.
Well, the good thing about the exploding whale is that it only explodes once.
So Thanksgiving night, it's not going to explode?
No. It's already exploded. It's done now. Now they're just going to be bad again.
Yeah. I'm not going to do the whole, like, this guy's old, he can't throw down the field stuff with Breeze.
Sounds like a lot. Like, that's where you're heading.
But he's sitting here three plus games into the season. We've got him with zero big time throws.
Zero.
Zero. Meaning he's just not, you know, he had a couple decent tight window throws, but he's not hitting those big chunk plays.
Are you saying play Teddy?
That's exactly what I'm saying. System quarterback. Look, what we've seen this year is the New Orleans Saints system can make Teddy Bridgewater look good. It's got Joe Burrow in the Heisman conversation looking like the number one overall pick. That's the system in LSU. And Drew Brees, product of the system in New Orleans. In the dome. No, really. I mean, there does feel like it's just this really short and intermediate pass game in New Orleans, which Brees has always been a heavy, you know, short and intermediate pass guy. But if you gave him opportunities down the field, he always took them because he was incredibly accurate down there. Those are lacking in the offense right now.
Yeah,
and I think that's a factor.
He's actually playing the way we were criticizing Teddy for playing at the start of his run, right? Which is you're doing the same things Drew Brees normally does, which is, you know, really pretty accurate underneath. He was less accurate. But instead of Brees, you're not taking those deep shots. You're just, you know, every now and again, Brees hits the deep shot because it's there. You're not even taking those attempts. And that was the problem. And, like, Brees is kind of there right now. Like, Teddy worked his way through that once he got some playing time back under his belt. And Brees hasn't done it yet.
You also just don't see him take sacks like that. I mean, he got sacked 6 times. That just doesn't happen often. He's always getting rid of the ball and everything. So just a weird game overall for that Saints offense. Chalk it up to an anomaly and credit the exploding whale?
Yes, the exploding whale theory is undefeated. Drew Brees' average depth of target this year is 6.5, which is Alex Smithian.
It's very low.
Even for, like, Brees is never at the high end of that, but this is way low.
He's at least usually in the 8s.
Yes.
Yeah, so those, they got to stretch the field a little bit more.
Yep.
In New Orleans. All right, Battle of New York.
Yeah.
Jets win 34-27.
They do. Jumped out to a big lead early, and then Daniel Jones wasn't able to execute the comeback.
Yeah. Jones didn't grade well despite 4 touchdowns and no picks, so that's going to be fun again.
Yeah. There were some ugly plays in there as well. This was an interesting game because you've got Le'Veon Bell and Saquon Barkley, who are the 2 superstars of those offense, that combined for like less than 50 yards, right? At one point, they were combined 26 carries for 27 yards.
Barkley went 13 carries for 1 yard.
Yes. Is that what he finished on? Because that's what he was at the time of that combined 26 stat as well.
And so Le'Veon 18 for 34.
Yeah.
Mm. I just saw everybody saying this is the... this is like the holy grail of running backs don't matter games.
It really is.
Because both teams scored a ton of points.
Yep. Both of them shut down. Both teams scored a ton of points because the quarterbacks were able to do it anyway.
Yeah. The receivers, too. Just the playmakers. The pass game in general.
Yeah.
That's the whole point. The pass game
trumps everything.
Overall can lead to points. There are outliers in there. Always.
Saquon, so in addition to not being able to get anything done on the ground, he also coughed up 3 sacks as a pass blocker. Oh, that's unideal.
Yeah. Yikes. Sorry, you're coughing, huh?
Sneezing.
The Giants' defensive front really dominate. I mean, they traded for Leonard Williams.
Yeah.
They already had Dalvin Tomlinson. They already had Dexter Lawrence.
All of
their
big defensive tackles played well.
Yeah. They actually rushed the passer pretty well, too. Leonard Williams had 6 pressures, but man, that was like, they're building like what the Lions have over there.
Yeah. DeAndre Baker is a major problem for this defense.
Yeah, he's
kind of highlighted this going into the game. He's a guy that was kind of vaguely scheme specific coming into the league, but it feels like
I thought he could do anything.
It also feels like now that it's not just that he's locked into one specific thing, but there have been reports that he's struggling with the system as well.
Oh, right? he admitted it after the Monday night game.
He's making coverage busts in addition to just getting whooped. And that's just catastrophic across the board. So we kind of highlighted this going into the game that him going up against Robbie Anderson in particular had nightmare written all over it. And that's kind of the way it ended up. Also, Alec Ogletree out in space was embarrassed a couple of times.
Yeah.
Jameson Crowder catches the ball, runs to his right, just turns and runs to his left. And Ogletree basically just falls over. Because can't possibly change direction in the open field.
Yeah.
So things like that, like they were just sort of outdone by superior athletes by a significant points in the game.
Nate Solder went down to injury. Eric Smith had to replace him. That did not go well. So the Jets had a bunch of strong defensive performances, led by Jamal Adams, who had one of those just awesome all-around safety games.
Just takes the ball away.
Yeah. There's nothing better than looking at the PFF grades, looking at a safety and just saying, run defense, pass rush, coverage, all really good across the board. That was Jamal Adams yesterday.
And that, by the way, is another one of those plays where, you know, four touchdowns, zero interceptions, but on the other hand, you allowed a guy to just come and rip the ball from you like you were a small child.
Yeah. So that all factors in.
Yeah.
Doesn't show up in the old statistics all the time. So the Jets win the Battle of New York.
In New Jersey.
Man. Jets coming off that loss to the Dolphins. They beat the Giants.
Beat the Giants, having beaten the Cowboys, lost to the Dolphins. Like, what the hell?
All that said, I think there are rumblings about Pat Shurmur's job. I don't think there's much he can do here. I honestly think, for all the things we've criticized Daniel Jones about, if you gave Daniel Jones a decent supporting cast, I think he could do some damage. If you gave, this is the Nick Foles thing, right? I mean, they compared him to Nick Foles. We've seen Nick Foles in a good supporting cast do some damage. We've seen him be not so good. If they had, this is one of the worst all-around rosters right now for winning football games. They got great run stoppers, but for winning football games, it's one of the worst rosters in the NFL. They can't cover. And it's Darius Slayton and Golden Tate right now at receiver, pretty much.
I mean, Tate's playing well.
I know they're playing well. I'm just saying, as far as, like, Tate's really good. I like him. Slayton might be a nice find for them. But when you compare that to, like, the receiving corps around the league, like, that's not getting it done over time.
Yeah. I mean, so, yes, the roster's not good. I'm not sure exactly what you expect Pat Shurmur to be doing right now. If his job is in peril, given how things are going, what exactly are you anticipating him doing better? Because, like, the problems on the back end in particular are not coaching. Like, that defensive roster looks terrible. Yeah. It looked terrible on paper heading into the season. It remains terrible. Adding another defensive tackle somehow didn't move the needle. It's a bad defense. Like, I'm not sure what you expect Shurmur to do about it midseason. So that seems silly. The fact that Daniel Jones is having ups and downs, again, like, what, you didn't expect him to come in and hit the ground running, surely. I think he's shown enough good stuff to say, yeah, okay, this is a long-term, certainly a long-term option. But again, like, what, you expect Shurmur to turn him into, you know, the one crazy year that Case Keenum had mid, what? That seems very harsh to be pinning all of this at Pat Shurmur's door. Daniel Jones, by the way, has just moved into a tie with Jameis Winston for most turnover-worthy plays in the NFL this year.
Yeah, despite not starting a couple games.
Yeah, yeah.
By the way, we have an update on the Ginger talent.
Oh, yeah. So
with Wentz on bye, it didn't go to Finley. Darnold stole it for the week.
Darnold had his best game
in weeks.
Okay.
We forgot about Darnold.
We did.
We just wrote him off.
Forget about him.
Hey, he's, you know, in the haunted houses and stuff. He's been seeing ghosts.
Yeah, well, he has. But I would have thought that he would have been more likely to steal it than Finley.
He grabbed it for the week. Look, he's now. If we know Darnold, his grades have gone like this, and now they're still negative. He just crept up over average. He's due for another. He's up for a couple.
Oh, his grades are like moving along. Moving along. Patriots game.
Yeah.
And then sort of bad, and just above average now.
This is the average line.
Yeah,
right there.
So his grades, in fact,
so he'll probably be
look like an EKG
going that way. Oh, yeah. You wanted to call him Salt. Maybe we should call him EKG.
Yeah.
So the funny thing about Jameis.
Cesium.
Jameis is an EKG. But his is like in a game.
Yeah.
Like this.
Uh-huh.
And then at the end of the season, it's just like.
Yeah. It's
a pretty flat line of consistency.
Exactly like an EKG.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jameis is EKG.
Yeah. Well, he's Cesium. He already has a nickname. Jameis is Cesium.
I
have to flip that.
I just love that Darnold's EKG is like game to game and Jameis is like throw to throw.
Yeah. We might need to flip that though if Daniel Jones actually overtakes him in turnover worthy plays. Like Jones may become cesium and Jameis will have to become potassium.
All right. We need a I need a key or something like that.
Well, you know the way they say that, you know, as much as you have loyal listeners, X percentage of every show is new people. A whole bunch of new people listening to this going, what the hell are they talking about?
I suggest you go listen to our preview show for week 10.
Exploding whales. Like, what is this?
We love dedicated listeners that have stuck through this nonsense, though. We appreciate you.
I don't have any idea what the hell we're talking about.
Especially you, Ben.
So, yeah, they're now tied in turnover-worthy plays. They're actually really close in big-time throws as well, 12 to 14.
Oh, yeah. Very similar guys right now.
And yet, so Jameis has six more interceptions. This is sort of shows how those things can break. Now, the fumbles are a different story.
Yeah, Jones has mostly a lot of his fumbles.
Jones has allowed people to just steal the ball from him. But, you know, the numbers are actually very similar. Touchdowns, 17 to 15. Interceptions, they're different, but we've got fumbles for Daniel Jones as well. Turnover-worthy plays, big-time throws. Like, they're basically the same guy right now.
Fascinating.
Isn't it?
Wasn't expecting that.
Daniel Jones is Jameis Winston is Eli Manning.
Huh.
Only one of them, like, Eli has a Super Bowl. Two of them, in fact. The other two guys don't. That's the only difference, literally.
Apparently, former Lion wide receiver Charles Rogers has passed away.
I saw that. I didn't see, like, what, how, why.
Yeah.
Because, you know, people of that age don't tend to just pass away.
Man, he was so good at Michigan State.
Yeah.
Rest in peace. Sorry, that was a little... just saw it.
It's quite the segue.
Yeah.
So to Jameis.
To Jameis.
Got the win.
He did.
In a weird game. Another weird game. Where Jameis, Jameis was quite Jameis. There were signs of life from O.J. Howard, randomly. Only he sort of overcame all of that by having a terrible outing, run blocking.
Yeah, his run blocking has been pretty poor this season.
Donovan Smith continues to play, like, okay, and then have a couple of plays where you're like, what are you even doing?
And this is where people were tweeting at me. They said, Jordan Hicks had the pick.
You did.
Pick against Jameis, as
that.
I predicted.
I called the exploding whale. You called the Jordan Hicks pick.
We were back. We had a good week.
If only we'd been doing that on Thursday, predicting the future from the past.
Kyler had been really good at avoiding turnover-worthy plays. He threw that pretty bad pick that was, you know, his receiver fell, but he also floated that thing up there. Kyler, you know, we talked about Lamar's confidence, and, you know, you see it in their playing style, right? We talked about this with Stafford through the years when he's starting to make some no looks and you're sidearming this and that and you're feeling good. Kyler's starting to show that a little bit. He's starting to show some of that comfort level.
Yeah.
Which I think is what you want to see if you're a Cardinals fan.
A few dimes dropped in. We had Larry Fitzgerald still making insane plays despite being 85 years old.
I know. It's great. He's our age.
Oh, stop it. Right. Same draft class, right? 04. Damn it.
Is he our, or is he 03?
Was he...
But he came, 04. He came out as a junior, though, so he's actually he's younger than us.
Is he?
He's a year younger.
Damn it.
Yeah.
God, we really have run out of people that are older than us now.
Yeah.
I don't like that.
I mean, he would still be...
He's a full year younger than me.
He'd probably still be dominating
a year and a
noon
half
ball
than you.
If he was hooping it up with us.
I think he probably would. Another thing to come out of this game is I was interested going into it whether the Cardinals spreading the ball out, basically dictating box count, would mean they'd actually be able to run against what's been a really good run defense. No. Turns out a really good run defense is good even when it's light in the box. Vita Vea, I think, is a big reason for that.
Yeah.
Like, you don't really, it doesn't matter if you're light on bodies, if you're heavy on poundage. And Vita Vea is very heavy on poundage up the middle. So that was a big part of it. Lavonte David has another one of those crazy strip fumbles. Force fumble, I believe, is the technical term. Lavonte David, in fact, has an insane number of those over his career. Remember, he went on a run before he had a couple of rough years of just bad play where he was making forced fumbles left and right.
Yeah.
Like, this was another one of those where he just goes in, rips the ball out, causes the fumble. He had a big game.
To be clear about the big Vita Vea types, I think there's a lot of value in the big run stoppers. It's just when you're talking about the Giants or you're talking about how we didn't like the way the Lions maybe built their team, it's when you go overboard. It's like when all of your signings are pointed toward that versus other things. That's the bigger issue. I think there is a ton of value in having a Vita Vea, in having guys up front that can just hold the point, not just defeat blocks, but finish plays. And then if you have guys that can do that, you might be able to sacrifice a fewer bodies in the box to play better.
But also, yeah, and Vita Vea in particular is so one of the problems with a guy like Damon Harrison, who is the best run stuffer in any position we've seen over the last decade, right?
Mm-hmm.
Was for a good period of his career basically so bad as a pass rusher that there was no point in having him on the field. In fact, not only was there no point, it was like actively harmful because you were sacrificing a spot that could have been taken up by a useful pass rusher. So you had to take him out in obvious pass situations. Vita Vea is good enough as a pass rusher, you don't need to do that. So you only need, like, his playing time is dictated simply by how much rest he needs over the course of the game, right? Not because, all right, this is a passing play, we need to pull off the fat guy.
He could push the pocket.
Yeah, I think that's a big key to some of these run-stuffing specialists, is they need to at least be viable on passing downs. Otherwise, it's a negative, not a negative overall, but it's a negative aspect of their play.
But if teams are going to keep stopping the run, you want to be some level of good at it. And if you have a guy that's making stops are valuable. The whole, like, 2 yard gains,
yeah,
are valuable. So, you know, if you have a guy that can do that, that's
yeah, putting that's a valuable team in disadvantageous passing situations is valuable.
Right.
So if you have a guy that's consistently stopping the run, therefore putting it, and so on, instead of second and five, it's now second and 10. We're now in an obvious passing situation that becomes third and seven. Suddenly that one guy stop at the goal line or stop at the line of scrimmage has turned the next two downs into favorable defensive passing situations.
Right. Nice bounce back game for Jamel Dean.
Yeah.
For the Bucs.
Huge game.
Gave up one catch for -2 yards on 5 targets, had a pick and 2 pass breakups. He had 3 pass breakups the previous week against Seattle, but also gave up like $160 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
So it was a nice bounce back for the big oversized linebacker sized corner.
Their secondary is going to be fascinating to watch going forward because it's very young across the board. I think a lot of them are talented. Like, I don't know if there's much saving Vernon Hargreaves.
Come on, Vernon.
Sadly.
Vernon's got something in there. He can do it.
Yeah, I don't know that he does. I don't know if there's much saving him, but the other guys all look like they could potentially become something. And it's just going to be interesting to see how that materializes over the next couple of years as those guys do develop together, where it ends up. Because if that becomes good, this defense becomes really scary.
Yeah, because
if it doesn't, you know, less
so. We liked what they did in the draft, not necessarily because of the players that they picked, but because of how much they've attacked the secondary. Sean Murphy, Bunting, Carlton Davis, and Jamel Dean are both just monsters and physical. Hargreaves might potentially have a role because he has a different skill set of, you know, from those guys. MJ Stewart from the previous year, kind of a slot tight end, eraser type. I mean, they've thrown a lot of bodies into their coverage unit. I don't know which guys are going to stick just yet, but they're moving in the right direction, the Bucs. Disappointing loss for the Cardinals.
Yeah. Then they had, you know, this was a game they kind of had to lose. They were definitely win with a shot of winning it and somehow conspired not to.
Conspired not to. All right.
Speaking of conspired not to win a game, somehow the Indianapolis Colts lost to the Dolphins.
Yeah. So we should have known this. It's officially the second half of the season.
Yeah.
Brian Hoyer can't play in the second half of the season.
It's true.
We had this.
Damn it.
Like, the Colts should know this.
This is the thing, right?
If I'm a GM, Brian Hoyer is a perfectly capable backup
for the first half.
I'll give him 9 weeks because he looked pretty good in week 9.
Hmm.
That's the first half of the season. After week 9, I will not let him be the backup quarterback on my team. His first and second half splits are just too extreme.
Yeah.
We should have seen this coming.
Yeah, we should have.
So historically, Brian Hoyer has got a ton of really good first halves.
This
and a ton of disastrous second halves of the season.
This does not help the people trying to argue that Jacoby Brissett hasn't been nearly as good as his absurd numbers.
Yeah, I thought that the Steelers game helped that, but this one doesn't.
Right. This one does not help it in the slightest. So, you know, Hoyer comes in, looks basically the same as Jacoby Brissett plus an interception, and everyone's like, well, okay, they'll just do the same thing. The defense in this game played really well. The offense, I mean, didn't even play that badly, but Hoyer was abysmal. Like, Hoyer was horrendous.
Yeah.
It's like, look, this entire team roster, top to bottom, is good. It's built with the premise that if your quarterback just isn't horrendous, you're going to win games. And that's basically what they've been doing all season long. with Brissett and then with Hoyer when he comes in. And somehow Hoyer was so bad that he managed to overcome all of that against the Dolphins.
Yeah, it wasn't good.
It was terrible.
Dolphins are balling on the back end all of a sudden.
His overall passer rating was 39. His passer rating in basically every facet was under 50. Like, this was terrible. They blitzed him 15 times, and he had a passer rating of 24.
Wow. So I will say, I mean, this is what we said about the Dolphins, right? Like, that defense isn't as bad as it showed earlier in the year.
Isn't it? Or did they just play the low-end Bobby Hoyer? The long-term listeners know.
They know.
The new ones don't.
Look, there's millions of listeners and like hundreds know what you're talking about. Bobby Hoyer.
Yeah.
Bobby Hoying.
Yeah. So
it's really Brian Hoyer.
It is. And he played terrible. Consequently,
Nick Needham with a huge game in the secondary for the Dolphins. Kind of liked him coming out of UTEP.
That'll happen when Hoyer's throwing the ball, apparently, when he's playing like this.
Yeah.
Why? Like, so it's... This must be strange. Jamarcus Webb, by the way, is playing left tackle in the NFL at the moment.
And, yeah, not good. And
surprisingly, not playing that well.
Looking at Justin Houston and all the other guys that had monster games rushing the passer for the Colts.
It's interesting. So this is a weird dynamic because everyone's been mocking the Dolphins for tanking, you know, actively for the entire season. And yet, obviously, you know, Byron Flores and those, they're trying to win, right? And they're winning, two of them. But what's intriguing is that it's not good. That does you no good whatsoever.
Yeah.
It's just this weird dynamic of being ecstatic to win a game that only hurts you long term.
Like I've said the last couple of weeks, I think it's less important to get number one versus, say, number three in this draft.
I mean, how many games do they need to win before they're at a number three?
Right now, they're still at two.
Yeah.
So I think the rebuild is more about accumulating assets, saying we don't necessarily care if we win this year because it's about the future, but that doesn't mean that we have to get, you know, pick number one versus three versus six, right? It's just having the assets that are the important part. At the same time, you do want to try to teach these guys how to win, and you want to figure out which guy, like, is Nick Needham going to be a part of the rebuild? You know what I mean? Like, you have to figure out which guys are going to be a part of this rebuilding effort here.
It becomes important, though, if you determine that one of these quarterbacks is the guy.
I think I've soured on it just because I don't know.
Right. And if you're right, right? Because obviously if you're wrong, it doesn't matter. You screwed it up. But let's say you identify one of Burrow or Tua as...
Or Herbert.
Yeah, sure.
He's in the mix.
If you say so. As one of the guys who can be, you know, a legitimate franchise quarterback going forward. And so let's say they go 1 and 2, right? But let's say in order to get your guy, you need to be in number one. Now, if you've accumulated the assets, you can still make it happen by trade. But if you didn't have to trade, you're obviously all those assets better off. And you're going to need to throw those assets at this roster because you've just dismantled it, stripped it for parts in order to get in a position to rebuild. So you can either, let's say Burrow's your guy, right? You can either get him at number one, just take him, done. Or you can trade from 2-3 to 1 at the cost of a king's ransom, give up all the picks that you've accumulated to make that happen.
Ah, they still have plenty, though.
If he's the guy, you're still in a good situation. But you're all those picks worse off. That's significant if that's how you rebuild.
I think that's why you have the picks, though. It's so you can maneuver up if you need to. But even then, we saw Seattle turn a first rounder into six players the other day. If you still want,
you can do that.
Volume, there's still opportunities to do
but
that.
But the other reason I think, and this is less of a great argument given how this has gone so far, but the other reason I think you accumulate all those picks is that the second you do get the guy, you can start making some trades happen to put pieces around him immediately. So the Browns, I think, in theory, I think the theory was correct. The way they did this around Baker was, all right, we've got the quarterback.
Yeah, here's our window. Let's go.
Now we put a roster around him in the space of, like, you know, 12 months.
Yeah.
And you can do that by using all those picks to trade for veteran players and all that kind of stuff. If you just traded them all away to get the QB in the first place, now you can't. You got to slowly piece this thing together like anybody else.
Yeah, ultimately a tough loss for the Colts. It's funny because a lot of the stuff we talked about, like the Colts offensive line should be able to do some damage and like all, a lot of the stuff happened. It was just like Brian horribly.
This is literally the
played horribly.
The idea of, you know, running backs don't matter. Basically, nothing matters if your QB is bad enough that he's actively throwing away the game.
Yeah, because
what happened?
If you just, whenever they're up on premium stats, when you look, go look at the Colts grades, I don't think they're up yet. Are they up yet? Let's see. No, because it was a 4 o'clock game. Whenever you look at the Colts stats, the whole team pretty much graded well, except the quarterback.
Yeah, and that's definitely.
And he graded poorly because of turnovers. Yeah,
yes.
So that'll do it.
And that's the thing, right? So as much running backs are the thing that don't matter the most, and then at the other end of the spectrum, quarterbacks are everything. If your quarterback plays terribly, you're probably not winning the game, regardless of what happens anywhere else.
There's a fun game going on in the QB grading chat right now.
Oh, yeah.
The question is, who is Josh Allen trying to throw this pass to? It's one of our debatable passes.
Yeah.
Because it looks like an overthrow to this other guy, but there's another. Yeah, it's just, who's he throwing it to? Find out tomorrow.
Tune in.
Exciting. All right, two more games to get through, including Pittsburgh Steelers 17, Los Angeles Rams 12.
Yeah.
So let's start with Minka Fitzpatrick, because there's some crazy stuff going on out there about Minka.
Okay.
Everybody's, because he keeps making plays.
A lot of them.
So I've heard his name mentioned in the Defensive Player of the Year conversation. Because he has interceptions and fumble sixes and stuff like that. I mean, those are just lucky plays. Like, he's making them. His last three games have been spectacular by our grades and all that stuff. Like, it's nice that he's making those plays. But this is also a season in which he did play for the Dolphins on a team that gave up like 100 to the Ravens, and he was the culprit. Biggest culprits in that game. That was the same season. Can we stop being prisoners of the moment?
No.
Mink has done some really nice job, nice things at safety for the Steelers. Let me just say
that. He's playing spectacularly, particularly the last few weeks.
He is. He's cut down on the missed tackles. I don't think he's had as many opportunities because he's playing more free safety, but he is making a ton of plays.
Having said that, those three games came against Miami, the Indianapolis Colts with the combination of Hoyer / Jacoby Brissett and the Jared Goff-led Rams that right now are a disaster on offense. So, yes, again, Minka Fitzpatrick's playing extremely well. But again, let's bear in mind who we're playing here, because that influences this stuff.
We mentioned the offensive line. Yeah, so just to finish the thing on Minka, our guy Moo, PFF Moo, check him out. PFF _ Moo was like...
What's his actual name, Timo?
Timo.
He's German.
I just like PFF Moo.
Sure.
So Timo was mentioned, he was kind of calling out Field Yates for pulling out some Minka Fitzpatrick splits. It was like, deep passes against the Steelers with and without Minka Fitzpatrick and all this stuff. And yesterday didn't help the cause because Minka made a bunch of plays. But he was basically like, hey, stop using the splits. It's QB dependent. We're also talking about like a free safety here. Like, there's so many other factors here. Because they played against Brady Garoppolo and Russell Wilson the first three games in that split. And since then, not nearly as good. So Mink is making some big plays and all that stuff. But, like, let's not flip. He had the game-ending interception, which was, like, he caught a tipped pass.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's not go too crazy. Kudos to the Steelers' defense, though. They're playing much better.
Yeah. So the defense is playing really well, and they went up. Again, this is another one that was kind of the writing was on the wall. The Steelers' defensive front, which has been really dominant, is going up against the Los Angeles Rams' offensive line, which is one of the worst. I keep expanding the number because there's so many terrible offensive lines in the NFL this year. But let's say it's one of the worst four offensive lines in the league.
You've declared five different offensive lines as the worst in the league so far.
No, I've declared them all. I've declared five of them like cataclysmically bad. And the order keeps changing which one is the actual worst. But the Rams are one of the worst four offensive lines in the NFL, any of which are bad enough to completely wreck an offense right from the get-go. So you look across the board, and they had injuries, by the way, in this game to the offensive line. So the bad line, again, got sent to the bench. And the one thing you learn whenever that happens is as bad as you think the guys are that are starting, they're better than whoever it is backing them up most of the time. So the Rams, they had injuries. They got forced into the bench. Basically, this line is Whitworth has declined to the point where now he's just okay. A little bit better than okay, maybe. And he is by far the best player on this offensive line, like by a distance. Rob Havenstein has somehow disappeared from being a good player to being a complete and utter wreck at the moment. The rest of the guys inside him are just not good to begin with, and they're better than the guys to back them up. So if any of them get hurt and they get forced to the bench, it gets even worse. So the one of the worst offensive lines in the NFL ran up against one of the best pass rushing units in the NFL on current form, and that went about as well as you would expect it to, which is to say the Steelers dominated.
Though I'm going to pull a Sam here, though, like you did last year.
What are you going to do?
Credit the Steelers' defense. They played great. But, man, we just started talking up Bud Dupree. And he goes one pressure on 47 rushes. We finally started giving him credit. I wrote a whole paragraph about his emergence. And he disappointed. Everyone else got after the quarterback, though. Javon Hargrave, Cameron Hayward, TJ Watt, even Tyson Alualu.
That's how bad your offensive line is. Tyson was able to have a day.
Ah, Tyson. He was just miscast as, you know, a first-round pick.
Yeah.
That's the only problem with his career.
And then, so the pass rush was dominant. That caused some errant throws from Jared Goff. And then the back end plays really well. Minka, we talked about Joe Hayden made some ridiculously good plays.
I don't know what is wrong with Goff, though. This was like turnover-worthy play after turnover-worthy play, like floating passes into window, like into tight windows where his receivers didn't even have a shot. I mean, and then he dropped in a nice throw here and there, but it feels closer to rookie year Goff than it does either of the last 2 years right now.
Yeah, and what's the constant thread throughout that was his offensive line was garbage both those years.
Yeah. But the system his first year was,
sure, it was
a disaster.
Worse. Yes. But the offensive line was terrible. Like, one of the biggest things they did was they brought in Whitworth, they bring in John Sullivan, they get good at left tackle, they get average at center. Havenstein was good at that point. Like, they turned what was a terrible offensive line into a pretty good one and became the best run-blocking line in the NFL for a period really quickly. That immediately transforms what you're dealing with. Now, this offensive line is worse than it was when it was a problem under Jeff Fisher. Now, the system is better, but the actual line is worse. So, consequently, Todd Gurley looks like just another guy. Huh, strange. The running back, when his platform is taken away from him, doesn't look like an MVP anymore.
Well, the quarterback,
how
too.
How unusual. Yeah, same thing with the quarterback. You dismantle the guy's pass protection. You don't have any run game platform. Every play, you're setting him up in a worse situation than the one before. So it's not
going
well.
I think that's the mid-tier quarterback is dependent on things.
Yeah, so
I'm going to give Dak a ton of credit for the way he played last night, but everybody's going to be like, oh, Dak's good. Reminder, Dak is good. Like, did you forget the last 2 years where Dak wasn't really all that good?
There is a constant...
Things are better in Dallas. Things are worse in Los Angeles.
There's a constant discussion in the NFL about what is more important, scheme or personnel. Like, does it matter if you have the best scheme in the NFL if your talent isn't good? If you have bad players, does it make a difference? Right now, obviously, there's more nuance than that because a guy like Bill Belichick can put players in the right situation to succeed and mitigate some of the sort of talent shortfalls across the roster. But I think what we're seeing here is, like, Sean McVay has a really good scheme. The system is good. The offense is good. Now, I think I don't want to say it's being found out, but teams are better equipped to deal with it now than they were when they first saw it.
Yeah.
So it's worse than, or it's not worse, but it's less effective than it used to be when it first burst on the scene. But I think what we're really seeing is it ultimately not able to overcome the talent shortcoming on this offense, specifically on the offensive line. Like, when your line is this bad, it doesn't matter what you're doing because it's not going to work.
Yeah, I'm not ready to completely write off McVay's scheme. We're just looking at the 2019 season. They scored 40 against the Bucs, or 33 against the Bucs.
Yeah, it's still a good system.
They scored 29 at Seattle. Now, they had a bad, you know, they scored only 7 against the 49ers, but, you know, they scored only 24 against the Bengals in London. I mean, there's ups and downs. They're this.
No.
EKG.
Oh, yeah?
EKG James? Offense. A lot of EKGs around the NFL.
They're cesium.
That's what makes our job so tough, Sam. We try to come in every Monday, and that's what makes talking heads idiots. Right? Because talking heads take this thing and let's make a declarative statement about this. And then the next week, this happens.
Yeah.
Now let's make a declarative statement about this, and then this happens, right? I mean, it's just tough.
So here's the problem, though, with that, is that if you're this team wants to win a Super Bowl, right? They lost in the Super Bowl last year. That's ultimately where they want to go again. And you can be there's value to being able to win the games against bad teams and being able to rack up points against useless defenses. But ultimately, you're going to have to do better than that if you want to win a Super Bowl, because you're going to get to the playoffs. The teams are better. Then you're going to run up against some good defenses when it matters. And if you can't do the same thing, you have problems. You know, one of the great things about the Rams last year is they could put up points on anybody. The Super Bowl didn't happen, but you know, they basically got that far based on the fact that they could rack up points against anybody in the NFL. Now what's happening is the offensive line is holding them back to the point where the system still functions, and it's still more than good enough to really cause problems to bad teams and to bad defenses.
Yeah.
But when you face a good one, it's done. It's not good enough to overcome that. So that's their issue, right? If they want to be a contender this year, you need to set your sights on the good teams. And if you can't do the same thing against them, you need to change things.
I think that's a good way to characterize things there.
Or even if you can change things, I mean, there's not much you can do about an offensive line talent problem midseason, right? So you might just be in a situation where ultimately this team is going to go as far as that offensive line can carry them, which right now is not very far.
Yeah. On the other side, James Washington, Deontay Johnson, and some big plays from those Steelers receivers.
Washington had a good game again. That was his second sort of career game on the bounce.
Yep. Deontay Johnson had a few plays. Juju caught 3 of 3 when lined up against Jalen Ramsey. Did have a drop when lined up against Nickell Robey-Coleman.
This was also weird because the Rams somehow were completely unable to get the ball to Cooper Kupp, who always catches a ton of passes. Steelers had some really good coverage on him.
We should also clarify here, by the way, the Rams scored 12. 7 came on that fumble return to start the game, and 2 came on a safety.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the offense scored 3.
Yes. Bad. Bad, bad, bad.
Yeah. So we're in a season now where they've scored 3 against the Steelers. They've scored 7 against the Niners. They've had some of these really rough type games.
Aaron Donald.
3 in the Super Bowl.
Aaron Donald was a freaking beast in this game. Like him, did you see how quickly
Evergreen
he destroyed David DeCastro for that safety?
Yeah.
Like, and you know, DeCastro is one of the better guards in the NFL. Just immediately swatted to the side. Donald bearing down on you.
Yeah, he's just ridiculous again.
Troy Hill, good game. Solid game from Troy.
It's all right.
Look, Troy had a good game.
Gave it up a little bit early on.
Look, Troy's going to give up some plays here and there, but he's a gamer. He's going to come back. He's going to make the key tackle on whatever it was late in the game to stop that drive. Okay, it didn't matter, but, you know, Troy was there. Troy was giving them a chance to get the ball back and win.
Moving on. Sunday Night Football. Vikings at the Cowboys. Man, this was an entertaining game. I think somebody tweeted at me, hey, I want to hear you talk about a game where the team that ran it better won the game. So this would be it. Dalvin's poor stat line got screwed at the end by a couple cheap losses there, but man, he ran the ball hard.
He's so really good.
Yeah.
I mean, as much as we harp on this idea of, you know, running backs don't really matter, he has consistently all season long been overachieving what the blocking has been giving him. Now, the blocking has been better than it looked right at the start of the year, but it's still not good necessarily. And I think overall, it's another one where the personnel is slightly worse than the output of the whole thing. Like, the sum of its parts is better than the components.
I think that the scheme, we talk about the Kubiak scheme all the time, the scheme does a really good job because a lot of, like the old school power play, everybody down blocks and you kick out. Mm-hmm. That really takes like 3 or 4 good blocks to work to have an effective play. And if you have like 1 good block, you get 2 or 3 yards or whatever. The scheme is doing a really good job of, hey, it's going to be outside zone one way, outside zone the other way, but they're running the toss quite a bit. Yeah. Like, they're getting Dalvin in space where he doesn't have to rely on, you know, 4 or 5 good blocks. It's like, get 1 good block, or even if the block is not great, make 1 guy miss and you can create something. They're doing a good job of getting him a little bit of running room, even without the blockers doing a great job.
It's a sort of more sophisticated version of what this sort of blocking scheme used to be way back when. You know, you think back when this first came on the scene, it was, you know, everybody stretch it laterally. We rely on our athleticism, and then the running back basically just picks the hole that opens up.
Yeah.
You know, effectively, there's no defined point of attack. you just find the gap that'll open up. Somebody's going to do their job. You find the guy that makes the hole, right? Now, it's more sophisticated than that now, but the idea is kind of the same, right? Is that you don't need this perfect synchronization of offensive blocking to open up a designed hole for him to hit and then make some space. Like, ultimately, there's a crease somewhere, and Dalvin Cook is among the best running backs in the NFL at A, finding it, B, getting through it, and then making some damage happen at the next level. But to give you an indication, he rushed for 97 yards, 77 of which were after contact, which has kind of been the story of his season. Like, the guy has been insane at getting more yardage than was necessarily there. Madison is doing a good job when he spells him every now and again and doing a similar job. Like, he's a more powerful guy, not quite the slashing.
He's running hard.
But he's making yards happen as well. So, yeah, the Vikings ran the ball to the point where they were able to hang with the Cowboys and ultimately sneak out a win. Cousins wasn't bad, but he had some big plays from some of his receivers and was kind of put in those good situations because of the running game.
I mean, he was 1 for 4 on 20 plus yard throws. The one completion was an underthrow where Diggs came back and caught it.
Catch.
And he only completed 2 passes at the intermediate level. It does feel like there are a few games in recent weeks where Cousins has the majority of his yards coming on the cheap boot action stuff and screens. I mean, he had 6 completions behind the line of scrimmage. He had a bunch of the short stuff. Nice red zone throw, the first touchdown there to Kyle Rudolph, and Rudolph's been a serious red zone weapon for them.
Pretty crazy one had a catch to bring it in.
Yeah. Had the 2-point conversion, so he's done a nice job.
This was also really interesting because the Vikings pass rush, it took them a while, but they did actually end up making some hay against that Cowboys offensive line. And critically, like, right at the end where it was important, you know?
Yeah, it's funny when you look. I was just glancing at the Cowboys grades, and my first impression was this is like a Deshaun Watson, DeAndre Hopkins type of game. We talked about the Texans for years where it's like the quarterback and the one receiver are dominating. Now, in this game, the best grades went to Dak, Amari Cooper, and Randall Cobb, and, you know, Zach Martin was fine, but everybody else, you know, meh, right? But Dak played really, really well in this game. Amari was incredible. And then Randall Cobb was key. I mean, that Dallas passing attack was very good, but a couple maybe questionable calls at the end when they were going on the game-winning drive.
Yeah, some iffy calls across the board. It was interesting because what we talked about before the game was exactly what happened in terms of the Vikings didn't have anybody that could cover Amari Cooper. And even if they did, they didn't really have anybody that could cover Michael Gallup either. And then if somehow you ignore both those two guys, Randall Cobb's busy carving them up in the background as well. So they really struggle badly to slow down this Dallas passing attack. Now, Trey Waynes was out, so Mike Hughes basically drew the assignment of covering Amari Cooper for most of it. They went after him pretty hard. Overall, Hughes gives up 154 yards at 11 catches, but he was targeted 17 times.
It's one of those games where you see all these like positive plays from him. You're like, man, he's holding his own. But when you're attacked that much, it's like there's only so much you could do.
And he was to a degree. You know, had a pass breakup. I guess you would say dropped an interception.
He definitely should have had that interception. I don't know if that was all on Dak. But
yeah, the touchdown was interesting because, so A, incredible, like extending over the sideline, toe tap touchdown for Amari Cooper was definitely offensive pass interference. On the other hand, before the offensive pass interference to push off and gain separation, there was like 8 yards of illegal contact by Mike Hughes. So it's difficult to be like, well, we got screwed on that one. At best, they decided that we're not going to call anything on this play and we'll just let it go, right? But it's hard to say, oh, we got screwed because you were holding him for like 8 yards before he pushed off. Like, you know, there's only so much you can complain about that.
Yeah.
But so Mike Hughes couldn't really deal with Amari Cooper, but pretty much nobody on this roster can. Everyone was saying, well, Xavier Rhodes did fine. I mean, he gave up all 5 targets were caught. So it's not like Xavier Rhodes was dramatically better. He was just less targeted. The point is, you know, people were saying, well, their best corner, Trey Waynes, was out. Sure. On the other hand, if Trey Waynes is your best corner, that in and of itself is a problem.
Not great.
The Dallas passing attack was able to pretty much move the ball at will against this Vikings coverage unit. The pass rush started to get there towards the end, which is interesting because usually when elite pass rush meets elite pass blocking, the pass blocking neutralizes it. It wins. But
they couldn't finish plays, really, though. Dak broke out of a ton of sacks, and the one time he was sacked, it got negated by penalty.
Sure, but a huge part of that. I mean, Dak is good at that, right? There's one, you know, just getting the pressure against this offensive line is an achievement.
Yep.
So Everson Griffin was able to beat Tyron Smith a few times and generate some pressure. He's having a career year himself. But what was weird to me is, so it was a close game. It was a relative shootout. Both teams were kind of moving the ball. Then Dallas gets the ball back. It's like literally they're able to move. They're able to pass it at will against this Vikings defense. So in a critical third down, they run the ball. What? Why? I know you paid Zeke a ton of money and you want to feel like you're justifying it, but you could run a slant every single play of this drive and not be concerned about not completing one of them.
Dak was moving the ball, man.
Like at one point, Mike Hughes was lining up basically with outside leverage,
I mean,
in man coverage, essentially saying, you can have the slant, I just don't want to get beat deep to the sideline.
The whole point of why running backs can't be MVP, I meant to mention in the Panthers game, because I joked, I was like, all right, here comes Christian McCaffrey on his game-winning drive. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm like, ha, 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 the MVP can't be leading the game-winning drive if he's the running back, especially when McCaffrey's being, you know, kept in the pass block. Obviously, the ball is in the quarterback's hands. And the quarterback for Dallas move the ball left and right, left and right. So despite Zeke and run establishment or any of that stuff, the ball's in the quarterback's hand. And he's doing a great job with it.
Yeah.
And he's a running threat, too. Like, if you're going
to
pull
it out of his hands and give it to Zeke. That's just third and two. Was it third and two, I think?
Yeah.
That, I mean, that was, to me, that was just a terrible, terrible decision.
Even if you're like, hey, I don't want to leave a minute on the clock for Minnesota, like, you still need to score.
They're like, Mike Hughes was giving up 9.1 yards per attempt. Is that attempt or reception? Attempt, right? Giving up 9.1 yards. Like, you could have, even if you decided this is four down territory, we're going to run a slant against them twice. Let's say the first one we miss. There's literally no way they weren't going to complete one of those two. Why would you run the ball against a defensive front that's still really good? That's just silly. It's bad.
Yeah.
Bad idea. And then ultimately you end up at the fourth down, you end up passing to the only guy in that back end that can cover, Eric Kendricks. And again, to Zeke.
Man, what a great play by Kendricks.
It was. But again, why are you, the guy is, Mike Hughes was targeted 17 times in the game, gave up 154
yards.
They
ran twice, right? Second and third down.
Well, whatever, like
they
second
ran
downs.
Twice.
Yeah. Second downs to a degree are, you know, whatever. All right, maybe it's an in-advised call, but all it's doing is dictating what your third down looks like. Third and two is essentially a do or die play, albeit one with a second life on, you know, late in the game. Why? I don't understand why you are passing the ball basically at will. Just pick a guy to pick on, pick up 5 yards.
Yeah.
And then if that didn't work out, which it didn't, fourth down, okay, if we're going somewhere, who are we going to target? Any of the cornerbacks that are giving up basically a ton, or the only guy on their team that's playing really well from a coverage standpoint this year against Zeke, who's not our best receiver.
Kendricks is more of a, doesn't have picks, but he's a defensive player of the year candidate.
Yeah, like if they had lined up and had Michael Gallup, Randall Cobb, and Amari Cooper running slants, all of them, one of them would have been open.
You want to call plays now?
I want to call that play because those were terrible plays.
So the Vikings win.
Yeah.
Kirk Cousins wins on prime time on the road.
Mm-hmm. Against a good team.
Against a good team.
Problem is, he's getting it all done too early.
Dalvin was better than him. Ah, Kirk. Never going to give you full credit.
He played okay.
No, he played well.
He played okay. And this was the game. Like, this, I mean, they were talking about it on the broadcast. These are the games that Kirk Cousins isn't supposed to win. The narrative says Kirk Cousins can't win this game, which suggests, I mean, maybe we're being the victim of the moment ourselves, but potentially the narrative is just off. It's not that Cousins can't win these games. It's that Cousins is a volatile quarterback, an inconsistent guy, and they've all broken the other way.
Because it's like nothing in football set in stone. Like Tom Brady's the best ever at making fourth quarter comebacks, but he's failed before.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that
But the
stuff
point
happens.
Is, I mean, maybe it's not that Kirk Cousins can't beat good teams in prime time. Maybe it's just that Kirk Cousins is extremely inconsistent and the bad runs have come against those teams.
Look at Dallas's last few weeks.
It gets much rougher.
I'm just saying, like, just dating back to week four, they lost to the Saints 12-10, right? They lose to the Packers 34-24. They lose to the Jets 24-22. They lost to the Jets. Mm-hmm. Then they come back and beat the Eagles 37-10. They score 37 against the Giants again on primetime. By the way, they just play all primetime games. And then lose to the Vikings.
Have you seen what the rest of their schedule looks like, though?
Yeah, what do they have?
Another
Eagles game.
Yeah, another Eagles game.
New England.
Redskins. New England. Lions is next up. Then the Patriots. Bills. Bears. Rams, who aren't that good anymore.
On paper, though.
Then Eagles, then Redskins to finish the season.
Yeah, so it's not great. Chris had mentioned it's a little bit cleaner for the Eagles after the Eagles play New England next week, and then after that, a little bit cleaner for them. So it should be a good battle, NFC East.
And that's it?
My voice made it.
It did. I didn't have to monologue anything.
Thank goodness. Did it for the team. I played hurt, and we did it.
Yeah.
We drew some things, had some fun.
Yeah.
All right, guys, if you like all those stats and grades that we're talking about, Premium Stats 2.0, all a part of your PFF Elite Package. The games are coming in throughout the day. And that's it, man. We'll be back Wednesday?
Yeah, for the YouTube-only thing, and then Thursday.
YouTube-only Wednesday.
Thursday on the podcast machine.
That's right. All right, guys, everybody, enjoy your week. We'll be back later in the week.
Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL.